Everybody, welcome back to Capitalism Remix. I'm Jeff Cherry, as you all know. I'm really happy with what's going on here right now because I got we brought in a new producer, a man Zay, so he's helping us out here making this thing really work. But today, I can't wait for you all to hear the discussion we're going to have with a very good friend of mine, partner, investee. He's an investor in our fund. He's been a staple in the entrepreneurship ecosystem here in Baltimore and now in Northern Virginia. Joe McClinsky, the CEO of Shift. So it's we have a long ranging conversation about everything from how he grew up, Johns Hopkins football, politics, and a little bit about things happening in the business world as well. So this is a great session. Can't wait for you to hear it. Welcome back to the Remix. Joe, how you doing?
Good, my man. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. As we were talking about before, I say never better. Even if it's not true, I get to convince myself that it's true.
That's right. That's right.
So I'm doing great, and I'm excited to have you on the podcast.
Man. I'm excited that we get a chance to muck it up again.
It's been a long time coming.
It has.
Yeah, I was privileged enough to be on your podcast in the past. Are you still doing your podcast, by the way?
No, I think the pandemic got me. I shedded some skin. And that was one of the layers of skin. I miss it. And I've definitely been thinking about kicking it back up. So these are the moments where I'm like, man, I want to be doing this again.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll get you to, to be a co-host or something here from time to time. That would be
cool.
Fun.
Be like the All In podcast with Jeff and Joe.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I think we could do better than those guys. Maybe we'll talk about that at some point today. But look, thanks again for joining, Joe. As you know, we call this show Capitalism the Remix, where we're talking about how many people in society are changing the way that we think about, feel about, experience capitalism. And when I first came to Baltimore, our mutual friend Yannick said to me, don't pass go. You got to go talk to Joe McClinsky because he's been talking about this stuff for a long time. So let's dig into that a little bit. How did you sort of get, I know how I got to that place, right? It was sort of consulting, it was seeing all this stuff happen, but how did you get to this place where the idea of thinking differently about work sort of embedded itself into you in some way? How'd you get that bug?
Well, given that I could probably go for about 6 hours on this, I'll give you the couple minute version. So, I mean, look, first and foremost, it's all about my parents. My mom was this spiritual person. We lived in, fairly low resource way. We had a pretty barren fridge. And, I have this story that I think about a lot, which was like, I don't remember how old I was, maybe 7 or 8, but we had church deliver food to the house. And like, it was like my favorite day. It was like Christmas. I'd go through it and find it was just, the basics. Right. And I remember one time they gave us 2 bags and I'm like, we hit the lottery. And my mom was like, take what you want out. And it wasn't even like the generic stuff, dude. There was like Kraft macaroni and cheese. There was like the real deal Holyfield. And I was like, this is amazing. She's like, great. Now we're going to get the other bag away. And I was like, what did you just say to me? Right. And so she was just this woman who we didn't have much, but we had all the right stuff that we needed, which was, she set an example on, what it really meant to be just a gracious, generous, selfless person. And she, she was bedridden from diabetes. She ended up passing when she was 44 years old. She spent 5 almost straight years in the hospital. She had 2 pancreas transplants, 2 kidney transplants. She was blind. She was in a wheelchair. I was her caretaker. I mean, it was a really hard moment to see sort of at that stage of, let's call it society, where we were in 5 schools in 5 years. I slept on people's couches. She was laid off at her job, single mom, and it just was hard. But yet she still had this generous gene to give out. You know, whatever we didn't need, we gave away. And then couple that peanut butter to this jelly called Jim McClinsky, my father, who's like 47 years this year, working for, you know, this trucking company, and just showed up, just the most consistent human being I've ever met in my life. Honor, high integrity. I mean, essentially Shift is the embodiment of these two people. And, you know, as I got through college, I remember you going from Patterson to Hopkins, you know, big quantum leap in terms of just socioeconomic status and the whole thing, that when I started my first little contracting company, business was an unlock for me. It was like project freedom. It gave me the ability to earn. It gave me the ability to learn. It gave me the ability to sort of create resources that I could make different decisions for tomorrow. And I just remember going into other businesses. Like I interned somewhere or I was working in all these other places, and I would hear these crazy stories about like people going to job, going to their job every day, and they hate it. And I think the light bulb for me went off there, which was two things. One, I am not employable just based on a lot of my pre-existing conditions, so to speak. And I think the second is that I just thought the game that we're all playing, like if you add up, I met people who were extremely wealthy at Hopkins, but they didn't seem very whole. Like it gave me a front row seat to see what the end might look like. And I think, you know, whenever we all get wherever we want to go, I think in some respects, a lot of the things that we know deep down, we know these things are true, which is like, yeah, you can make money and you can probably not be an asshole along the way. You can, you know, have some interesting ways of creating value. And I think you had a gentleman from Motley Fool talk about this, and capture value. So it's not, again, this isn't go hug a tree and don't find a way to take care of your family, but can we be a good ancestor? Can we just remember, and I'll stop the soapbox rant here, that like every day I look out of my office and I look at that road and I think to myself, the hands and feet that made it, I will never know who they are. But I yet walk on it every day. And like, I just think that we're all standing on the shoulders of someone that thought slightly wider about their circle of concern. They widened the aperture and said, you know, I can think about something else than just me. And I think that, you know, would be such a really good way to connect the dots on like, look, human species, society got here through collaboration. We might not be as cool as the starling birds or, you know, the termites that build those big, large towers, but like we still do some really cool stuff when we do it together. And I think capitalism practiced in a way that you believe as it relates to stakeholder management, as it relates to, you know, again, widening your circle of concern, not just because it feels good, but because it actually will unlock some value is the way that, I don't know, it's sort of the way I think it happened, but you tell me.
Yeah. No, look, there's so much stuff that's tied up in there, Joe, that hopefully we'll get to a bunch of it. Like, you know, Raj Sisodia, who's been on the podcast before, wrote a new book called Awaken, where he talks about that he spent most of his life trying to please his dad and trying to honor his mom. Mm. And I want to go into that and see if there's anything on that for you. But before I go there, the way that you describe this widening, right, and this ability to, you know, this sort of desire, right, to care more about just ourselves and what we can get. And when this widening happens in the right way in capitalism, we're also able to create more value, right? That's what you and I both believe. Why is this idea so hard for some people to get their heads around, right? Early today, I talked to Ed Freeman again, who's been on the show, where he came through the accelerator and he did a session, and he was talking about, you know, people on the, I don't know if right or left or whatever, the Republican side of the aisle who are down talking the stakeholder model and ESG and conflating them together because, you know, they think Ed's, you know, he says, I piss off both sides. The one side thinks I'm a communist because I'm not just talking about shareholders. And the other side thinks I've given into business because I talk about how to create value. But I wonder, you know, we think this is the simplest idea. I know I do, you do, I think Ed does. Why is it so hard? Why are there so many people still out there saying, you know, Jeff and Joe are full of shit. This thing is just about the money. And anyone who tells you different doesn't get it. And I don't care about anybody else. Why are so many people still singing that old narrative, do you think?
Three things quickly. One, Charles Eisenstein, who's written Sacred Economics and a bunch of other books, is sort of a philosopher at some level. He calls it the story of separation. The story that there basically isn't enough, that we look around from a resource standpoint and that this story of separation is rooted in everything that we've ever created. So, you know, the idea that there is a winner and a loser is a story of separation. The idea that what I do today may not impact you, but I mean, if you want to get like crazy, you know, philosophical on the quantum physics side, like we're definitely in tank, you and I, whether we want to be at this point or not. What I do here in Vienna, Virginia, you know, as I used to be in Baltimore, it impacts you and vice versa. We just don't connect that dot. So that's number one. Number two, I think that there's a story of suffering that we all traversed, we all journeyed through that has not been, that wound has not healed. And I think a lot of us are walking around, and I can just speak for myself, that sometimes my reactions, my projections, the way in which I might look at how I show up or however it is, if I am pinned against the corner, I might lash out. I might fight with my limbic system as opposed to my prefrontal cortex, which just basically means I haven't dealt with my own stuff. And I think men, you know, Chip Conley, Richard Reeves, you know, Jordan Peterson, I think, you know, Professor Galloway is also talking about this, which is like women have gone through revolutions. They've gone through, you know, all of these moments where they're just constantly, you know, look, they have more progress to go. But like, if we just looked at the last 50 years, you know, what it means to be a woman in this world, what it means to be a woman in business, that has, at least we could agree it's evolved. But guys, it has not. I mean, you know, Chris Rock has got that, you know, famous joke. He's like, you know, the only people that are loved unconditionally are women, children, and dogs. He's like, men, they are loved under the condition that they provide. And he's not wrong. So like, I think you have to like put a little bit of truth in this soup and say, okay, look, I don't want to live in a scarce world. I want to say that there's enough to go around for all of us. But the final thing I'll say is this. I think it's also something that we want it to be true. Like you and I, Jeff, bleeding hearts, big ones. I think we have both suffered and endured enough that we say, you know, it's like the difference between the hero and the villain. You know, the hero says never again, and the villain says, I'm going to go get you. So I think we've like transcended those two archetypes. And I think as we're trying to transcend this, we're rattling up one more little thing that is just part of reality, which is, look, you know, Mother Nature, she's not kind. She's constantly trying to kill us. There are tornadoes and hurricanes. I mean, the neighbor next door has just chopped down a tree that must have been 350 years old. All the squirrels are gone. There's a constant battle to eat or be eaten. That is also true in some ways. That's still part of, like, if you look at chimpanzees, they're crazy in terms of their fighting. They collaborate to a point. So I think it's actually more in our nature, not that we sort of say, okay, great, we're just going to let each other, you know, eat each other. But I do think we have to acknowledge we're still just, you know, genetically monkeys at some level and animals, and we're trying to work this out too. We're telling the wrong story, which I think is a lot of what I've learned from you about, you know, how can you think about a different way to just have this stuff show up. And I think three, it's really about like, are you doing, like, no one's going to look at Donald Trump and say, man, that guy's really worked on himself. Whew, he's making progress towards becoming a better man. Like, you can like what he's done, but then you can also compartmentalize and say, gosh, this has got daddy issues. Well, I think a lot of the way in which business, look, it's played like a sport. And, you know, unfortunately, we still do this win-loss thing way, way too much. So anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that you've been like this since I met you. You give, and I think that you're right about, you know, all the things that you said, and you give people a lot more credit because, you know, this is part of us, it's built into us. And I want people to evolve maybe a little faster than they are or that they have, right? Because, yeah, some of this is endemic to who we are as, you know, as mammals, as, you know, as humans. It's been baked in. But I think that, you know, the thing that drives me crazy about that is even when you can see that, and I think a lot of people can, you can see that this is not in your self-interest,
right,
to act right this way.
Right.
You can't stop it. Can't stop yourself, right? Which sort of drives me crazy. And I guess that's probably why I saw this podcast, right? In the first place, yes, to see maybe we can put out enough stories out here that people will begin to come around. And maybe what we do, you know, one of the ways to do that is to sort of start telling, you know, sort of giving people some grace, as you did. And I think in that whole piece there, that's given me an idea that, one, maybe I should have some people on, and it's probably not a bad idea, who disagree with me and have that discussion a little bit to see where that goes. So that's one thing. And maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll go back to, so for everyone out there, Joe is the one that he got me listening to the All In podcast, which I think is great. It's a great podcast and you should listen to it or at least check it out. But they've been getting a little too political for me lately. So I've sort of gone away from it because I don't really agree with most of the politics. And I've gone to listening to, you mentioned him earlier today, Joe Scott Galloway, yeah, and Pivot and the you know, Professor G podcast. And maybe it's just because that Kara Swisher and Galloway agree more with my politics.
Right.
I do think that a lot of what they say is impactful, but that's telling me something about what I should be investigating here. It's because we got to find a way to come together on this, I think. Right?
100%.
Because we got to find a way to come together on this, right? And one of the reasons why I want to come together on it, because I don't know if you saw the I did a little video on LinkedIn last week, and I wrote a little piece on Medium about it. But my niece has found a job in Cleveland, and this place that she found that she works there, you know, they've created such an amazing culture that, you know, she's a little bit, she's on the spectrum. So she's got some, you know, issues when it comes to work and, you know, being one place all day and that sort of stuff. They've created such an amazing culture that I wrote, you know, they treat her with love and care. They praise her when she deserves it. There's no one gaslighting her. When she gets something wrong, they try to figure out why, and they try to, you know, train her on how to do better. It's just a really amazing place to work. And I go home, and I've been dealing with this my whole life, and I wonder what you think about this. When I talk to my dad, he says, don't work too hard.
Mm.
And even my mom, who was just the most positive and joyful person when she was alive, people would say, you know, I don't like work. And she's like, well, that's why they don't call it fun. Right. So we all had this mindset that work has got to be bad. And then we spend so much time there. Right. And I'm like, well, maybe it doesn't have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like music to my ears, my man. I mean, I think, look, at a human level, I think what your, you know, niece is experiencing is, I think, what we would look at as, you know, it's not the seed's responsibility to grow if you're a farmer. It's the soil, it's the environment, it's the nutrients, it's the weather. Now, I'm not a farmer, so this is about the end of the analogy for me. But as an organizational leader, you have an opportunity to provide the rich environment, I think, from a cultural perspective, such that your culture drives the performance and not the other way around. So that's the first piece that comes to mind. But the second piece is, look, I think, you know, my dad's version of work, your dad's version of work, I mean, they sound like they'd be really fun to put together here because, you know, you know, like in some ways, he's like, yeah, the hard work, white knuckle, like, you know, just go, force the fit, show up, you know, out, you know, be the first one in and the last one to leave. That was his formula. And, you know, what would I say to a guy who started out sweeping floors and ended up in the executive, you know, conference room of a, you know, or the executive suite in a 4,000 person company? I mean, I think this is also, like, everybody's got to pick them. It's like, my favorite line is, your house, your rules. So if that's what, you know, if people want to choose the work, in a weird way to you and I, then let them do it. If you're a leader, though, and you're trying to get the best out of your people, I mean, this is just, you know, I just did this for a big company today, 50,000 employees. I was with their top 150 leaders. They have people in 80 some countries. And I was just like, look, we all know this to be true. How many of us have children? A bunch of people raised their hand. I was like, how easy is it to get your kids to do something you want them to do that they don't want to? And everybody just laughs. You can't make these little fuckers do anything, pardon my friend. And I'm like, great. So let me ask you a question. Why would you tell a grown ass adult where to be, why to be, when to be, and how to be? Like, why would you then all of a sudden apply this treatment to an actual supposedly evolved human? Because if you take away choice, I mean, you've heard me say this a lot. If you take away choice, it's why they have the Sunday scares. Like, nobody wants to do something they have to do. They only want to do things they either get to do or that they want to do. So, you know, when you hear Kobe Bryant talk about what made him amazing, God rest his soul, he never said it was work. He never said it was. Now, it was hard work he put in, but he didn't look at work in the same way I think a lot of our fellow brothers and sisters do, which is it's a hassle, it's a chore, it's a means to an end. And I say, look, unless you're independently wealthy, you can have a bunch of hobbies so that you look forward to the weekend. And or you could potentially just love what you do or love who you do it with, love who you do it for, love that you're part of something bigger and better. And maybe that fills your cup. But look, at the end of the day, I think what you've done is beyond writing books, you know, with all due respect to Raj and all these other folks. I think you're providing proof points. Companies, real companies that are sprouting up as these startups within, you know, the Novella Center and Conscious Venture Lab and partners. It's like, I think that's the way forward. And I think it's like the Bill Maher approach, which is, yeah, let's talk to people who don't agree with us. Let's get them in a room and let's let the steel manning of the argument. So back to just all in for 1 second. Jared Kushner, also not a friend of mine, also not someone I looked up to, right. Also not somebody I really ever would have spent time listening to before. But Chamath, who is one of the four horsemen of this podcast, yep. I've heard him change his mind 3 or 4 times this year publicly, which is not something people do. It's just right. Not what they do. He's like, you know, I feel like I've gotten smarter about this and I feel like I was gaslit. I'd like to amend my point of view. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So then I heard him talk about this hour to 2 hours with Jared Kushner on Lex Friedman's podcast. Then they brought Jared in, by the way. So this is definitely sending you the wrong direction is my sense. But then I heard this guy talk and let's be clear. He's starting at like a -100 to me. Okay. -100.
Yep.
He might be up to like a -10. And it's yeah. Just, it's less about, do I like him? There's a group I'm in called Baby Bathwater. And I love this metaphor because the two founders, Mike Hollis and Michael Lovitch, have this philosophy, which is that there's baby and then there's bathwater. So take the baby and throw out the bathwater. Like there's got to be baby in all of this, which is like it's allowing us at Conscious Venture Lab to steel man the other side. Like why wouldn't this be the way to do it? Well, maybe what we do is we do that such that it's less about winning or losing, but it's more about the best ideas will win. I still say that we're onto something, you're onto something here. And I think pressure testing it. You know, you've done that by raising 2 funds, pressure testing it. You've done that by helping hundreds of entrepreneurs. You've pressure test that by helping all these other funds and all these other accelerators that you spend tireless time with. And now it's like, okay, let's pressure test it maybe against people who violently, fiercely have good faith debate about why we're out of our mind here.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, this is a good point. And I think that you're right because, you know, when I do the conscious, you know, capitalism stakeholder boot camp, right? And we're going into places and there's always a component of someone in there is not going to agree. And I love that, right? I honestly do. I love when someone in the audience says, wait a minute, what about this? What about that? I'm not sure I agree. Because the main thing, it gives me an opportunity to hone my message, right? Because I take this as a challenge to me, not a personal challenge, but a challenge to the way I communicate, right? My friend Thea Polantic in Chicago, who does a lot of work with us, always tells us, you know, when you're getting something back from society, from your community, from your culture, from your business that you don't necessarily agree with, take a look in the mirror, right? because it may have something to do with what you're putting out there and the way you're putting it out there. So I love that, you know, those debates to say, okay, let me see if I can hone my message, because it makes so much sense to me. Not necessarily I'll change your mind, but I want to understand, why don't you agree with me? What is it that you're questioning? So I can investigate that myself and say, either that's right, it should be questioned, or I'm just not, I'm not articulating it correctly. I think the other thing that this brings up for me, Joe, is that we've been telling founders this for a long time, that, you know, there's no absolutes here. So if you operate your business with a stakeholder model, you might not succeed, right? Or you might succeed wildly, right? Just like if you operate your business in the command and control and everyone's an asshole, I'm just here for the money.
Right.
You might not succeed, or you might succeed wildly. And I've been going to the asking people, you know, in the my house, my rules vein, which world do you want to live in?
Right.
If you have an equal opportunity to be successful, if you believe that, which I do, which world do you want to live in? And you get to choose. No one has to listen to me, right? No one has to do what I say. But it's probably worth you thinking about, if I could live this way and be successful, why wouldn't I want to do that,
right?
Because the other way can be pretty miserable, right? You have to develop, now, if you want to live in the stakeholder model, you have to develop some other tools and techniques, and, you know, you have to get in touch with yourself a little bit more, because we're not used to treating employees that way and being there for them and creating care and thinking about love in the business world. We're not used to thinking about that. It can be uncomfortable for people. People don't want to go there.
Right.
So you have to develop that gene, if you want to be there. But if you're able to, and make this enjoyable for everybody in a way that you can go to work in the morning and people go to work for you, can be excited about it. They don't get the Sunday scaries. They don't need a restaurant call. Thank God it's Friday. It's like, this is just good. This is fun. And we still make money. Why wouldn't you want to do that? Or just get to choose, right? So I've been going down that idea, and, you know, this whole idea of the best ideas will win. I think you're right. I think that's probably another reason why I'm doing this podcast. Let's expose these ideas to as many people as possible and get the pushback or get the buy-in and see if the best idea wins, right? And like Chamath, I can't remember, Fraser always talks about this. Wait a minute, you used to believe this, now you believe that. Well, I got new information. When I get new information, I change my perspective. What do you do?
Right. I think Neil Tyson deGrasse had that question right during the Trump election, which was like, what would it take for you to change your mind? Like, what would you have to hear, see? And if you haven't identified something, then it means you're in a loop. It means you're being co-opted. It means that you're programming, you know, it's like, are you serving the pattern, or is the pattern serving you? And I think, you know, it is, I'm reading, by the way, some amazing book right now. I've got like two quick things to share. I think you're going to love this. So one, Netflix did a huge documentary on the James Webb Telescope. It's called Unknown Cosmic Time Machine. It's amazing. If you have any interest in Star Trek, or you're a nerd, or whatever it is, this thing came out in June. Me and my kids watched it. It was just profound. We basically have a satellite called the James Webb that's following us a million miles away from Earth right now, such that we don't like distort any of the light. We're seeing way into the distant future. And then I've got a funny one for you. So that happens in June. In July 18th of 2023, no bullshit.
Yeah.
There's a paper now written, says the universe is not 13.8 billion. We now have just discovered it's 26 billion. We're twice as old. We're twice as old. Like, if I told you, Jeff, you're twice as old as you actually were, right? Like, this should be a little bit more known. And I think, like, one of the things, one of the things,
I feel twice as old.
I might look twice as old. But my point in this is that we don't know. We've got one satellite pointing at the vast, infinite universe, and we're still speculating that we have any clue of what's going on. So that's number one. Number two, Robert Sapolsky just published a book. So this is a guy who I have read several of his books before. One of his best books was Why Zebras Do Not Get Ulcers. He's been studying stress and neuroscience and kind of the neurobiology of what happens as we pressure test ourselves. And this new book is on free will. It's called Determined. And he's looking at free will. So I won't deep dive. I'm not smart enough to replay what I'm reading yet. I'm about halfway through. But the essence of the book, back to what you're describing, is it's that we are all stuck in some sort of trap between the opportunities to seize and the temptations to be resisted. The proverbial fork in the road. Do I do a little more for Jeff today, or do a little more for me? What are those things that sit before us? And we think that it's all us. Like, I think a lot of us have a narrative that it's all pulling yourself up by your bootstrap. And then I know you and I believe it's like, there's no such thing as self-made. Like, I got here because of you, and you got here because of me, and we're all doing this thing together. But there's a third bucket, which is that we're all like pinging off of each other. Like the conditioning, remember the quote, you gave it to me. We shape buildings and then they shape us. We shape society, yep, and then it shapes us. So I really do think it's almost like we're doing it to ourselves. Like we're not almost able to like eject from the story. So when you talk about like, did I change my mind? It's like, yeah, I mean, it's hard because when I watch what's going on with Hamas and, you know, the Palestinians and the people in Israel, and wow, this is a hot subject right now, right? And we don't have to talk about it. But I do think our inability to just call things right, call things wrong, and not join a team is something we should all consider.
Oh, I could not agree with that more, man. I mean, I just think that, you know, and that's where we are, right? If I'm on your team, everything you do has got to be right. And if I'm, you know, or else I'm not on your team.
Right.
And, you know, you and I both know this. You know, I played with guys at Catholic. You played with guys at Hopkins. And in the middle of the game, I was like, that ain't right. Right? What? You need to get your shit right, because that ain't right. Right? And we're still on the same team, but we're able to call each other out. Right. And I think we've definitely – and I tell you what, this is – I don't know about you. I've got a group of friends – that I think, and a lot of them came from, you know, people I play football with, that we don't see eye to eye politically. But we're able to call each other out or to at least have those discussions. And I think the reason that we are, and it's not a lot, you know, it should be more than but there's a few. It's because of the trust, right? It's like, I'm not trying to change your mind. I'm trying to understand.
Right.
And if you agree with me on this one thing, it's not a slippery slope, right? It's not going to make you agree to me on everything. Rick Fraser and I talk about this all the time, that, you know, we don't agree on, you know, I'm a public school guy and he says everyone should get a ballot, right? But we do agree on what we would like to see in terms of, you know, the power and the ability of education in the country. So we've always said, you know, if anyone would listen to us, we could lock ourselves in a conference room for a day and probably come out with some ideas that would work, that wouldn't be one of us giving in to the other. Why? Because we trust each other. If I say, you know, I can't say, well, vouchers are horrible, Rick, all the time, because if I say vouchers are good, really what that means is you just want to get rid of public schools. He says, no, that's not what it means.
Right.
What it means is, I think there's a better way to do what we're doing. And that's what I think, right? So it's just, it's really that thing about the teams is a really important thing, I think.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I just published a quick little reel about this, which is like, you know, when you think about a family business that's in generation 3 or 4, so it's a 100-plus-year-old company,
yep,
we already, all of us, can picture the entitlement oozing out of said business, right? It's like an episode of Succession. Yeah. Well, we need to apply that same treatment to government. We need to apply that same treatment to unions. We need to apply that same treatment to all of it. And it doesn't mean burn it down to build it back up. It just means, are we willing to have a good faith, red team, steel man, scenario plan, have a conversation where we just say, look, your buddies, you know, and you, as you talk about this, there's a little bit of, I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt, which you've heard me say this before. Yeah. This is my anecdote to fix the world, is that instead of celebrating Thanksgiving in 10 days, which is, I think, one of the greatest atrocities that this country continues to celebrate, a holiday in which, no, we didn't steal it, because guess what? They never said they owned it, which is really interesting. So back to like owning land, and that's Charles Eisenstein who talks about this. Like, right. The idea of ownership is actually at the root of that story of separation, according to him. But the second piece is like, how about we stop fake saying thank you? Because we're faking it, all of us here. We're not really saying thank you. What are we thanking? It wasn't a happy ending. We killed 94% of their population, by the way. Like, we were as brutal as a people have been brutalized to. How about we just give each other the benefit of the doubt? One day, every person you meet, doesn't matter who they are, they are afforded an A. They didn't have to earn it. They didn't have to do anything for it. We just, one day a year, we all got to walk around and go, that's interesting. Like, not cynical, not like, I bet you he's full of shit. Not like, if we could practice this benefit of the doubt, like you're doing with your buds, I would be really curious to see what happens.
Yeah. You said the happy ending reminds me of, you ever see that The Devil's Own, the movie The Devil's Own?
I don't think so.
This is an Irish story. It's an Irish story, Jack, not an American one. It doesn't have a happy ending. Anyway, that's an aside. One more question, Joe. And then I have two more questions for you, and then we'll wrap this thing up, although I know we could go on forever. You are a CEO, a consultant. You're an investor. And you're a venture-backed founder, all of those things wrapped in one. A speaker, a TEDx talker, a author, all that stuff wrapped up in one. What have you learned over the years? Or what's a one or two things that for the audience, if it's founders, other founders, or potential investors, or people who don't agree with us? What have you learned? What are a couple of things that you've learned that you'd say, let me leave you with this, based on all those things I've done?
Yeah, I would say the thing I've learned, we've talked about it a little bit, which is, I think the things will move faster the more that we stop assuming we know everything. And I think that, as a tech founder, as someone who's building a platform, I've over-indexed quite a bit. A few times on the company that we initially acquired for this idea, I over-indexed their traction. I over-indexed what they gave me as their assumptions. And I would just say that over-indexing created a level of confidence that took a year, because I was fighting to prove what they had created. And this is just a microcosm that I think, you know, starting off, Richard Saul Wurman, the founder of TED, is 88 years old. He's written 91 books. And his entire philosophy of being, of living, of just his whole thing is he doesn't know anything. And he went to Wharton. He graduated Penn in 3 years. He learned from Louis Kahn and Frank Gehry and all the Lloyd Wright and all the people I'm messing up that he would be so mad at me right now about, right? You and he
yeah, as a fellow architect. That's all
right. But you feel me, yeah. Right? And so I just think that, like, you know, when Danny Kahneman wrote that book, Thinking Fast and Slow, the whole notion of system one, system two, these default programs, that the further we can activate that prefrontal cortex, it just says, hey, wait a minute. Maybe it's not legacy thinking. It's not something I've seen before. Like, can I see the same thing with fresh eyes? And would I be willing to start over? And I think that, you know, the idea of me jumping into all of these different things, I could weave a tale later to tell you why it's all connected and everything else. The honest truth is I wanted to learn. I wanted to jump into things I had no idea about. And I wanted to see what is my process of getting the white belt. Like, I'm doing jujitsu with my son right now, and God, I'm terrible. I'm like, how long am I going to be stuck in this white belt? Like, am I going to be here forever?
You're supposed to be. Yeah. You're supposed to be terrible right now. Trust me.
And I think I've somewhat sadistically fallen in love with suffering, such that I'm willing to put myself through this pain and agony of trying new things, as opposed to hitting the repeat button on a formula of success. I think in some ways, when I get there, I go, all right, let's try to do something else. So that's not good advice. Like, I've dug way too many holes in way too many places and maybe not built or dug deep enough. But I definitely think that the idea of just falling in love with learning, and more importantly, failing, and more importantly, not knowing anything and getting to that place, I think is, it's a profound, it's almost like, Jeff, you know, you've had a lot of loss in your life. I've had a lot of loss in my life. When I've had moments where that loss feels like a chest, my chest, like the weight is like leaves, that same feeling I have when I just admit the obvious, which is I don't know anything.
Look, things will move faster as soon as we understand we don't know everything. That's one for the ages. You write that down. I'm going to put that quote in the show notes. We'll also put all of the books that you were talking about. We'll put that in the show notes as well. Joe, I can't thank you enough for joining. I do have one more question.
Yes, sir.
I stole this from Ed Freeman, and it's one of my favorites. And I didn't prep you on this, so you know you just gotta wing it. If you were stuck on a desert island, what are the 5 albums or 5 records? You can go either way. I usually like albums, but you go single songs that you must have on a desert island.
Ooh, all right. All right, give me a second here.
I'll give you a Shinola turntable with a battery operated so you can listen to them. But what are the 5 albums you must have?
Albums. Well, so I have been changing up my song taste quite a bit, thanks to one of my very good friends here. I would say you're going to hear some things that you haven't heard before. There's a company called Hot Chip. That plays a song, One Life Stand. It's a song about a guy saying, you know, will you be with me? Will you be my one life stand? And the guy says, yes, will you stand by your man? So it's like this interesting to and fro back and forth that I would like love to hear. As a side note, Erica asked me to remarry her while watching that band play my favorite song. And she's like, will you remarry me in California? I was like, yes. So we did that this year. That's
what I want. Oh my God. So I want everyone to recognize that Joe, with the Freudian slip, he said there's a company called Hot Chip when he mentioned there's a band.
I meant the band. All right. So Hot Chip would be one. Okay. I would say you got to throw a little Eminem in there. I think you got to throw a little Kanye in there, a little Jay-Z in there. I think My Morning Jacket, and then maybe finally, I'm a Swiftie, and I'm not too, I can admit it. I think
proud of it.
That's right. So throw me a little Taylor Swift in there just to keep me happy. And I think, I think between Eminem, Kanye, Jay-Z, Taylor Swift, and a little Hot Chip, I'd be just happy.
All right. Well,
what are yours?
This is good. You want mine?
Yeah.
So I said there's an album by Van Morrison with a guy named Joey DeFrancesco, I think his name is, who's an organ player. That would be top one. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it'd be Van Morrison. I would have Kinda Blue by Miles. I would have, and this is Ed and I both agree on this one. I would have Yo-Yo Ma doing the Bach concertos.
Wow.
What was my other two? So I don't know if he gave me 5, but let me think. Oh, I would have Vince Garboli, Charlie Brown Christmas. I would need that as one of my 5. And then I think. The next one is tough. It might be Stevie Wonder, Inner Visions, maybe.
I feel like I went to McDonald's and I ordered a Happy Meal. You were like, what do you want your last meal to be? I was like, oh, I'm going to go to McDonald's, get a Happy Meal, and get my little cheeseburger fries. And here you come in with, can I have some foie gras and a little aperitif?
Hey, look, I got Joe and I got my main man, my new producer, Zay, here. I think that Zay is going to be better at putting yours in the show notes because Ed said the Allman Brothers And Zay put in there all my brothers or something like that. You know, the young folk.
They
it's
don't
the
know.
Two of you.
They don't know.
So, they don't know. Zay, he's shaking his head. You know, he don't know. But anyway, Joe, thanks for doing this today. This was awesome. I think we've covered a lot of ground. We could probably cover a lot more, but we'll leave that for another time. And we'll talk again soon. All right, my man.
All right, brother. Thank you. Big loves.
Thanks for joining. Well, that was something, wasn't it? Joe is if he's nothing if not high energy. I love talking to that guy, and you know, we went to a lot of different places, but I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. He's just a dynamic a businessman. A great father, a great husband, and a great friend. So I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. We'll have Joe's, he didn't really give us five albums, you know, Zay. He gave us five artists. So we'll put the artists in the show notes. We'll add some of the books that Joe talks about. We'll put a link to his website, a link to Joe's two books, which we didn't really get to. He's a New York Times bestseller. So we'll have those in the show notes as well. But thanks again for joining. As always, this is The Remix. We'll see you next time.